Good morning, everyone. Bonjour, mesdames et messieurs. Welcome to the 45th annual meeting of the shareholders of SNC-Lavalin Group, Inc. I'm now calling the meeting to order. My name is Gwynne Morgan. I'm chairman of the board of SNC-Lavalin Group and your chair for this 2012 annual meeting of shareholders. I'd like to begin by thanking all shareholders who are here today or having returned their proxy forms to us. We have a practice of alternating our annual meetings between Montreal and another city in the, across the country. So last year was Montreal, this year is Toronto, and next year will be another great Canadian city elsewhere. We're pleased to be here in Toronto. The company has been working locally in Toronto since the mid-1960s. In any given year, well over $1 billion of our revenues come from Ontario. That represents about 20% of our total revenues and over one-third of the company's total revenues, of the Canadian total revenues, I should say. Our more than 5,000 employees in Ontario, most of whom are based in Toronto, make up our 18% of our total workforce. We now have 13 major offices in Toronto and across the province. Our worldwide centers of excellence in for power, mining and metallurgy, as well as operations and maintenance, are headquartered right here in Toronto. And now let me introduce the persons on the stage with me today. Mr. Ian A. Bourne, Vice Chairman and Interim Chief Executive Officer, and Mrs. Arden Furlott, Vice President and Corporate Secretary of the Corporation, who will act as Secretary of this meeting. The notice of this annual meeting of shareholders of SNC-Lavalin Group, Inc., and related documents have been distributed to shareholders registered in our records as of March 5, 2012. This is Muriel Millette and Jamie Bajic from ComputerShare Investor Services will act as scrutineers for this annual meeting. I have received their report and can confirm that we have a quorum, which means we have more than 20% of our shareholders who are present or represented, present in proxy or represented at the meeting. I therefore declare the meeting to be properly constituted for the transaction of such business as may properly be brought before it. I would ask our corporate secretary to file the statement as to distribution and report on, and to report on the quorum with the records of this meeting. Thank you. In order to make the best use of our time at the meeting, I know that shareholders' time is always precious. I'd ask that you hold your questions until the general question period at the end of the meeting, and I might remind everyone that only registered shareholders and proxy holders are entitled to take an active part in this meeting. In the interest of time, I also arranged for certain shareholders to move and second the various motions at the meeting. The vote on the resolutions to be put to the meeting today will be conducted by a show of hands, as allowed in our corporate bylaws. I'd now like to draw your attention to the text that appears behind me and advise everyone that certain of the comments you may hear today in today's presentation may involve forward-looking statements that involve assumptions, risks, and uncertainties that could cause actual results to differ materially from future results expressed or implied by such forward-looking statements. And now, ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to address the issue of corporate governance at SNC-Lavalin. Around this time in 2011, the people of SNC-Lavalin around the world had proudly celebrated the company's 100th anniversary, a milestone that very few companies in Canada or elsewhere ever reach. It's now clear that our 101st year, 2012, will be the most challenging year we've ever faced. As you're aware, we've encountered a number of difficult issues over the last months. In February, as a result of matters brought to the board's attention, the head of our construction division, an officer reporting to him, were discharged from the company, and the board asked the audit committee to conduct an independent review of payments totaling some US $56 million. A great deal of work has been done on that investigation and on that review, but unfortunately, no direct or conclusive evidence was found to determine the actual recipients or use of those payments. But our work is not over. As indicated in the conclusions of our independent review, we are continuing to look into compliance matters, and we are committed to getting to the bottom of any violations of laws or misappropriations of funds that may have occurred. At the board's initiative, we were able to learn. At the board's initiative, what we were able to learn was turned over to the appropriate authorities, including the information in respect of the payments of the $56 million, and we will continue to cooperate fully in their ongoing investigations. Of course, it's difficult to predict the outcome of any investigations, but we are hopeful that our actions will help in establishing accountability and bringing to justice anyone found to have been involved in criminal activity. We cannot comment further at this time, but stress that we are hoping for a full and as swift as possible resolution to these matters so that we might move on with carrying this great company forward. On March 26th, the board accepted the resignation of Pierre Dehem, and our search for a new CEO is underway. Meanwhile, at the request of other members of the board, Ian Bourne agreed to serve as vice chairman and interim CEO. A director of SNC-Lavalin since 2009, Mr. Bourne is a seasoned executive who has served as a senior officer in a number of public companies, and you will hear Ian's report later in this meeting. A special transition committee of the board has been formed, consisting of Ian Bourne and myself, and the Audit Committee Chair David Goldman and Human Resources Committee Larry Stevenson. Our primary role during this transition period is to help Ian and his highly capable leadership team, who are with us in the front here today, lead the way forward. We need to be sure the organization remains focused on retaining the confidence of our clients and delivering on their expectations. We can do that. The shares over time will take care of themselves. This has been a very intense time. I want to tell shareholders that all of your directors have been dedicated to dealing with these issues and helping this great Canadian company to progress through this, through and past these challenging times. As chair, I really can't emphasize enough how much I and the company have benefited from their wise counsel. SNC-Lavalin has consistently ranked highly in external corporate governance surveys. But the real effectiveness of corporate governance only becomes clear when a company encounters serious challenges. When the matters relating to the improper payments of $56 million came to light, your board acted diligently and swiftly by initiating the independent review, adopting its recommendations, making public disclosures, and turning over information to authorities and cooperating fully with them. The audit committee identified, recommended remedial actions aimed at reinforcing standards of conduct, strengthening internal controls, and reviewing the compliance environment. All of these were adopted and are now in place, adopted by the board. We have great confidence in the management's capacity and commitment to translate the lessons learned into company-wide improvements. This work is ongoing, and the aim is to ensure that no such events ever again occur at SNC-Lavalin. The board is committed to further lifting our standards in a number of key areas. The company continues to improve its business practices as articulated in its Code of Ethics and Business Conduct and available to the public on the company's website. While we act to make SNC-Lavalin's compliance standards more robust, it's very important to understand that the actions of a relative few do not reflect the values and commitment of the company's 28,000 capable and dedicated employees serving clients with diligence and with integrity in over 100 countries. We are extremely proud of the people who have made SNC-Lavalin one of the most respected names in global engineering and construction sector. The board has confidence in them and the executives who lead them. Another key to successful corporate governance is to recruit quality directors who bring complementary backgrounds and skills. And we are very pleased to announce the appointment of Eric Siegel, who served as the President and Chief Executive Officer of Export Development Canada from 2007 to 2010. Mr. Siegel brings a great deal of knowledge to the board about many of the developing nations where SNC-Lavalin is active. In December 2011, Senator Hugh Segal was appointed by the Minister of Foreign Affairs to serve as Canada's special envoy on the Commonwealth renewal. His work involves travel to many of the 54 member countries of the Commonwealth, and after 13 years of dedicated and valuable service to the company's board, Senator Segal has decided not to stand for re-election due to the demands of that new role. We thank the Senator for his many contributions to the board and the company, and we wish him every success in this important new role. And now, ladies and gentlemen, we'll proceed with the first item on the agenda. The consolidated financial statements with the auditor's report have been sent to all shareholders that requested them, and along with the annual report for 2011, is also available to all shareholders attending this meeting. I would ask the secretary to include a copy of the annual report and consolidated financial statements with the records of the meeting. We shall now proceed to the second item on the agenda. The next item of business on the agenda is the election of directors. They will serve from this day until the next annual meeting of shareholders or until they cease to hold office. The candidates proposed by the Board of Directors and Management are listed in the Management Proxy Circular. All are currently directors of the corporation and have been directors since the respective dates specified in the Management Proxy Circular. I've introduced myself already, but I would like to now introduce the other 10 candidates. I would ask each director to please rise when your name is called. From Calgary, Alberta, of course, I introduced Ian Bourne before. I think he's from Calgary. He's from Montreal. He's from Toronto. Almost everybody, everywhere these days, Ian. And from Toronto, Ontario, Mr. David Goldman. From Kilmarnock, Virginia, Dr. Patricia A. Hammack. From Montreal, Pierre Lessard. From Gibson's, British Columbia, Edith Marcoux. From Toronto, Lorna Marston, who isn't here today with us. Oh, she is here. Marty, when did you get here, Lorna? I was looking for you this morning. Good. You just rushed in the room. I'm glad that you could make it. She had another commitment, and she's been working hard to get here, so pleased to hear that she's here. Montreal, Quebec, Claude Monjou. London, United Kingdom, Michael Parker. Ottawa, Ontario, Eric Segal. Welcome to the board, Eric. From Toronto, Larry Stevenson. I would now ask Mrs. Marnie Dicker to make a nomination.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Marnie Dicker, and I am a shareholder of the corporation. I nominate for election as directors, the 11 candidates proposed by the Board of Directors and Management, whose names are shown in the Management Proxy Circular until the next annual meeting of shareholders or until they cease to hold office.
Thank you, Mrs. Dicker. Are there any further nominations? If not, I declare the nomination closed. And since there are 11 directors to be elected, we will have 11 candidates, I will now entertain a motion to elect the nominees. Ms. Lily Freitas, would you so move?
Mr. Chairman, my name is Lily Freitas. I am a shareholder of the corporation. I move that the 11 persons who have been nominated be elected to serve as directors of the corporation until the next annual meeting of shareholders or until they cease to hold office.
Thank you, Mrs. Freitas. Catherine Margulanis, would you please second the motion?
Mr. Chairman, my name is Catherine Markojanis, and I'm a shareholder of the corporation. I second the motion.
Thank you, Catherine. I always talk to Catherine by her first name because I have trouble with the second one sometimes. All in favor, please raise your hand. Against? By a show of hands, the motion is carried. In view of the results of the votes, I declare that the 11 candidates nominated at this meeting have been duly elected directors of the corporation until the next annual meeting of shareholders or until they cease to hold office. We shall now proceed to the third item on the agenda, appointment of the auditor. The next item is the appointment of the auditor, and you've been informed of the management in the management proxy circular of the Board of Directors' recommendation that Deloitte & Touche LLP be reappointed as the auditor of the corporation. I believe Dr. David DeAngela has a motion in that matter.
Mr. Chairman, my name is David DeAngela. I am a shareholder of the corporation. I propose that Deloitte & Touche LLP be appointed as the auditor of the corporation to hold office until the next annual meeting, and that their remuneration be fixed by the Board of Directors.
Thank you. Do I have a seconder for the motion?
Mr. Chairman, my name is Murray McPherson. I am a shareholder of the corporation. I second the motion.
Thank you, Murray. I might just say something here about our auditors. This has been a particularly challenging period for not only the internal audit people, but the external auditors in particular, and the effort they put forward on behalf of shareholders has been extraordinary, and we appreciate it. So all in favor of the motion, please raise your hand. Against? The motion is carried. I confirm that Deloitte & Touche LLP has been duly appointed as the auditor of the corporation until the next annual meeting of shareholders. We'll now proceed to the fourth item on the agenda. We'll now consider the resolution, the text of which is set out in Schedule C, page 102 of the Management Proxy Circular, dated March 26, 2012. In brief, the resolution is to adopt a non-binding advisory vote on executive compensation. To become effective, this resolution must be adopted by not less than a majority of votes cast in its favor by the shareholders of this meeting. Would Mrs. Kim Ellis please present a motion for this resolution?
Mr. Chairman, my name is Kim Ellis. I'm a shareholder of the corporation. I propose that on an advisory basis and not to diminish the role and responsibilities of the Board of Directors, the shareholders accept the approach to executive compensation disclosed in the corporation's management proxy circular delivered in advance of the 2012 annual meeting of shareholders of the corporation.
Thank you, Mrs. Ellis. And would Linda Lang please second the motion?
Mr. Chairman, my name is Linda Lang. I am a shareholder of the corporation, and I second the motion.
All in favor of the motion, please raise your hand. Against? The motion is carried. I hereby confirm that the resolution approving the adoption of the non-binding advisory vote on executive compensation has been duly approved and confirmed by a majority of the votes cast at this meeting. There is no other formal business to come before the meeting, and before we proceed to the general question period, I'd ask Mr. John Smoley to move that the formal part of the meeting be concluded.
Mr. Chairman, my name is John Smoley. I am a shareholder of the corporation. I propose that this meeting be concluded.
And do you have a seconder for that meeting, for that motion, please?
Mr. Chairman, my name is Louise Peltier. I'm a shareholder of the corporation. I second the motion.
Thank you, Louise. All in favor, please raise your hand. Against? The motion is carried, and I declare the formal part of the meeting ended. I would now ask Mr. Ian Bourne, Vice Chairman and Interim Chief Executive Officer, to speak to the meeting about the highlights of the year 2011 and report on the first quarter's financial results.
Thank you, Gwen, and good morning, everyone. I'm pleased to welcome you to our annual meeting of shareholders. As Gwen mentioned, we have had a presence in Toronto for over 40 years, and Ontario is the province where we now have the second largest number of employees. Close to 5,000 SNC-Lavalin employees work in the mining and metallurgy, power, operations and maintenance, industrial, infrastructure, and environment sectors here. As interim CEO, my role is to help ensure SNC-Lavalin's clients continue to receive the best services our company has to offer while preparing the ground for a new CEO. While I recognize the significance of our current challenges, I'm enthusiastic about SNC-Lavalin's future. This company is one I have long admired and have been proud to serve as a board member since 2009. SNC-Lavalin is one of the world's largest engineering and construction firms with a strong backlog, excellent people, projects in 100 countries, and a very strong balance sheet. We have 28,000 employees working on approximately 10,000 projects, and we're very proud of the work they do every day and their professional commitment. Ladies and gentlemen, I would like to talk about several things today. I will recap our 2011 financial results. I will show you some of the exciting projects that demonstrate our strategy in action, and I will conclude with some remarks about how we are moving forward to ensure our projects and people can continue to provide our clients with industry-leading expertise. Let's start with our annual results for 2011. SNC-Lavalin attained solid financial results for the year, notwithstanding that they fell short of our expectations. Our revenues for 2011 increased by 20% to $7.2 billion. Revenues increased in all the company segments, with packages revenue growing by 34% and services revenues growing by 19%. In 2011, net income attributable to the SNC shareholders was $379 million. Last year, 2010, comparable net income was $431 million, which excludes $46 million of one-time gains from dispositions. This decrease mainly reflects a lower contribution from the infrastructure and environment segment, partially offset by higher contributions from all other segments. The return on average shareholders' equity for 2011 was well above our target range. Our balance sheet remains strong, with cash and cash equivalents of $1.2 billion at the end of the year. And our revenue backlog increased to $10.1 billion, up 4% from the same time last year. In the first quarter of 2012, our board of directors increased the quarterly cash dividend by 4.8% to 22 cents a share. I would now like to look at some significant highlights from 2011. In infrastructure concession investments, we brought our ownership in AltaLink to 100%. This company, in which we have had a stake since 2002, transmits electricity to 85% of Alberta's population and businesses. Alberta is a province that continues to grow quickly and whose economy demands a lot of electricity. In power, we acquired certain assets of AECL's commercial reactor division, thereby creating CANDU Energy Inc., and allowing us to employ CANDU technology around the world. This acquisition strengthened our nuclear business considerably, as demonstrated by the recent award of a major contract for the definition phase of the Darlington Retube and Feeder Replacement Project here in Ontario. In infrastructure, we acquired UK-based Interfleet Technology, rounding out our expertise in the urban transit sector. Interfleet also gives us additional heavy rail capability, which has applications in the mining and metallurgy sector. This acquisition further expanded our geographic presence, bringing us new offices in Sweden, Germany, and Norway. In Quebec, the provincial government announced a $25-year plan to develop its vast, resource-rich northern region. Some $80 billion is expected to be invested, presenting a wealth of opportunities for our divisions working in the mining and metallurgy, infrastructure, power, and environment sectors. And with our acquisition of Stavibel in 2011, we now have an even wider network of regional offices in the province. We further strengthened our leading position in Canada's real estate management sector with the acquisition of Arcturus by our operations and maintenance group. O&M provides steady earnings and cash flow and is a key element in our service offering for P3 projects. There have also been some changes to the Office of the President since our AGM last year. To reinforce our commitment to operational excellence, a new position was created, that of Executive Vice President, Integrated Management Systems. Jean Baudouin, formerly EVP Chemicals and Petroleum, assumed this role to oversee corporate activities related to risk management, health and safety, environment, information technology, and our initiatives linked to corporate social responsibility. We are also pleased that Andy McIntosh joined us as the new EVP for the segment, which has recently been renamed Hydrocarbons and Chemicals. The new title better reflects the full range of our products and services. Jean-Claude Pingat, EVP Europe, retired at the end of the year, and we're pleased to welcome Christian Jacquet as his replacement. Christian brings us broad experience in engineering, project management, and corporate leadership. Charles Shebb has been appointed EVP Infrastructure and Construction. Charles has been with us for close to 30 years and has worked on many prestigious projects around the world. The next portion of my presentation will focus on some of the main areas of interest for us and how we are strategically oriented to address them. These market trends will be important to how we grow our business in the coming years. Let's start with infrastructure, which includes rail systems, ports and bridges, as well as buildings such as healthcare, educational, and recreational facilities. Urbanization, aging infrastructure, and population growth will drive demand in all our infrastructure sectors around the world. Rail systems and ports are expected to be the fastest growing segments, and these are areas where we have extensive experience and expertise. We also continue to see strong growth in commodities, and demand should continue to rise. Global demand and supply uncertainty have increased the price of oil by over 300% in the past decade. This has led to greater exploration activity and made it profitable to recover deposits that require larger investments, such as those in the oil sands. The industry outlook remains strong over the next decade, and we have deep expertise in hydrocarbons and chemicals, as well as an established presence in many key growth regions, including Venezuela and Colombia. Mining and metallurgy is another important commodity-based sector for us. We have world-class expertise in aluminum and potash, for example, where we expect growth of over 5% per year in terms of output. We are well-positioned to use our global experience to help our clients deliver these projects. Let's look at power, another sector where we are highly active and diversified. Population growth, rising living standards in emerging economies, increased global business activity, and the need to replace much of the world's installed base will drive the need for new power capacity and opportunities. Over the next 10 years, the installed base of electricity generation is expected to grow by a rate that exceeds global economic growth by 1 or 2%. The bulk of this growth will be in the emerging markets where we already have a strong local presence, such as Latin America, Asia, Africa, and Eastern Europe. There's also the environment sector, where we have over 800 experts across Canada and around the world. It's very clear that strengthening of environmental regulations, as well as the fundamental need to respect local ecosystems and the people who depend on them, is leading increased activity in this sector. Most of our projects have important environmental or sustainability components, and we think that that will only increase in the coming years. Now that I've talked about the key areas where we see some growth, I'd like to share with you the strategic pillars that are allowing us to further enhance our position in these markets. Our seven strategic pillars are the essence of our business strategy. The first one is operational excellence. Successful project delivery is at the heart of achieving operational excellence. It includes exceeding targets for health and safety performance, project schedules, and client satisfaction. Let's look at some projects that demonstrate how our focus on operational excellence translates into real results. Our commissioning of the 550-megawatt Astoria Energy 2 gas-fired thermal power plant went exceptionally well, and the project, in which we have an 18% ownership stake, achieved full commercial operation in July of last year. Power Magazine selected Astoria 2 as a top plant for the skill with which it was constructed in an urban setting. In the Canada Line, P3 project in British Columbia, which we financed, designed, and built, continues to exceed expectations. The system achieved ratings for both quality and availability of over 99% in 2011. Our scope of work on the Calgary West LRT project includes 8 kilometers of guideway, 6 passenger stations, 9 power stations, a major highway interchange, 4-story office building, and associated roadworks. We made very good progress in 2011, despite poor weather that would have stalled many construction projects. Anglo-American's Barro Alto ferro-nickel project successfully reached mechanical completion in Brazil. Barro Alto was recognized with 3 health and safety awards in 2011 by industry and government partners. Health and safety is one of our We Care pillars, and it is an integral aspect of everything we do. Our second strategic priority is improved competitiveness. A focus on cost efficiency and product differentiation, supported by strong capabilities and experience, is essential to ensuring we remain competitive. Bringing several areas of expertise to individual projects is another strategy to ensure enhanced competitiveness. We currently are doing that on several major public-private partnership projects here in Canada, for example. We help finance and design and are now building the McGill University Health Center's Glen Campus in Montreal, one of the biggest work sites in Canada. It will be the only hospital in Quebec with full-service pediatric and adult specialties under one roof. Once construction of the super hospital is complete, our operations and maintenance team will provide maintenance services for 30 years. Stony Trail Road is the largest single highway project in Alberta's history and its largest P3 infrastructure project. Our joint venture, Chinook Roads Partnership, was awarded a contract to design, build, and partially finance the southeast section, as well as provide operations and maintenance services for 30 years. Our third strategic pillar is stronger relationships with clients. First and foremost, we consider our clients to be partners. To understand how important our clients are to us, you just have to consider that a significant percentage of our contracts are repeat business. Here are a few projects that demonstrate our ability to build and maintain strong global customer relationships which span many years. We are executing an EPCM mandate on the Jansen Potash Project in Saskatchewan. Jansen is the first potash project under the BHP Billiton Hub Program, which we are also coordinating. While BHP Billiton has clearly defined long-term objectives for the hub, they have left it up to us to determine how best to achieve those results. It's gratifying to see that a company like BHP Billiton, a leader in health, safety, environment, and community, has confidence in our systems for managing these crucial project elements. We were awarded the EPCM contract for the Amal 2 aluminum smelter expansion in Abu Dhabi, which will be the largest facility of its kind. We have been working with the client since 2007, when we were awarded the first phase of this project. In fact, we have been working on major aluminum projects in the UAE consecutively with the same clients since 2004. Saudi Aramco is building the King Abdullah Petroleum Studies Research Center. We are helping them establish procedures, policies, budgets, and an organizational structure for the operations phase of this project, and will also handle commissioning. Saudi Aramco has been a valued client of ours for close to 2 decades. But this is the first time they have awarded us a project in the operations and maintenance sector. The Department of National Defense renewed our in-service support contract for the Canadian Navy's minor warships and auxiliary vessels for another 4 years, with 4 one-year renewal options. We have been working with the DND on variations of this contract since the mid-1990s. The fourth pillar is geographic diversification and growth of markets and offerings. Expansion of geographic, product, and sector coverage allows us to access new and growing markets. By making strategic acquisitions and building the capacities of local offices, we seek to make gains in regions and sectors where we have been less active. 2011 was an excellent year for increasing our coverage of key sectors and geographies. We were awarded an EPC mandate for 2 83-megawatt geothermal plants with Contact Energy in New Zealand. This is our first geothermal project and the first time we've worked in that country. The contract also marks an important step for us as we continue to build on our position as a global provider of green energy solutions. Another good example is our retubing and refurbishment work at Argentina's Embalse CANDU nuclear generating station, which will add 25 to 30 years to the power plant's operational lifespan. While we have been active in the nuclear sector for close to 50 years, the AECL acquisition provides additional expertise and positions us well to win business, servicing the installed base of CANDU reactors around the world. Stornoway awarded us a diamond mine study, part of Quebec's extensive Plan Nord economic and social development initiative. If viable, the project will be the province's first diamond mine. In Korea, we have three projects underway designed to meet Korean, U.S., and European regulatory requirements. We're conducting concept design studies for the Green Cross multi-product biopharmaceutical plant. The Korean government also hired us to design regional high-tech medical complex hubs. These are our first major contracts in Korea's pharmaceutical sector. Titanium Corporation is creating a new value-added industry in Alberta to turn tailings waste into useful products. We designed its pilot plant, which will recover hydrocarbons and heavy minerals from tailings. This is an exciting development because tailings management in the oil sands is a major challenge. Our fifth strategic pillar is building sustainable people and organizational capabilities. We have a strong team, and we're determined to remain an employer of choice. Throughout 2011, we put tremendous efforts into strengthening performance management practices, developing leadership programs for managers, and getting to know the talents of our people throughout a formal review process. Indeed, recruitment, talent management, and training remain top priorities. We're expanding our networks and recruitment tools and developing strategic partnerships with targeted universities worldwide. We look forward to building on our partnerships with engineering faculties. Maintaining financial strength and flexibility is our sixth strategic priority. A strong balance sheet and credit rating is important for maintaining shareholder confidence and, most importantly, benefits our clients. As a profitable company with over $1 billion in cash, we are able to make key acquisitions, invest in major concessions, and take on large EPC projects. Being a leader in corporate social responsibility is our seventh strategic priority. Sustainability is a watchword of our times. For us, being a socially responsible company means not only our own commitment to CSR, but also helping our clients deliver projects that respect the environment and communities and attain financial results. Here's the 60,000 ton per year Ambatovy nickel project in Madagascar, where we are currently supporting the commissioning and startup effort. The project was carried out with respect for Madagascar's unique environment. Ambatovy was also a showcase for our local resource development initiative, which provides training to native populations and helps local businesses develop so they can become stakeholders in our projects. This initiative, which makes a lasting difference to local economies, is now being implemented on other projects. In Newfoundland and Labrador, we're working with the Muskrat Dam First Nation on the Muskrat Falls Power Plant and Transmission Line, part of the massive Lower Churchill development. Our plans accommodate traditional hunting and fishing practices and promote long-term social and economic benefits for local communities. Integrating local communities into a project at the earliest stage is important to ensure project sustainability. The Dalla Dam project has benefited some of Afghanistan's most vulnerable people by allowing the introduction of high-value crops like saffron, which create local jobs and economic activity. This project, like many others around the world, reflects our commitment to supporting local communities. We are also proud to provide temporary accommodation for citizens of Slave Lake, Alberta, as they continue to rebuild their homes and lives after one of the worst fires in Canadian history. Our O&M business unit has had an excellent relationship with Alberta Infrastructure since its work on the flagship Calgary Courts project completed in 2007. As you can see, we are making progress on our seven strategic priorities so we can maintain an advantage in the key growth sectors I mentioned earlier. The last part of my presentation will focus on what's in store for 2012. While we are maintaining our formal 2012 outlook that net income will be in line with the full year 2011 net income, but internally we are targeting an improvement over last year. We anticipate that the power and mining and metallurgy segments and the infrastructure concession investment segments will be the main contributors to net income. Now let's look at our first quarter results, which we announced this morning. Net income was $67 million compared to $76 million for the first quarter of 2011. The mix of revenue was different from 2011, which resulted in lower contributions in four of our segments, partially offset by better contributions from the mining and metallurgy and power segments. Our order backlog continued to grow. Some promising new developments this year include being named the preferred bidder for the Highway 407 extension here in Toronto and for a contract to expand and modernize the Saint-Justine Children's Hospital in Montreal. Let me talk now for a minute or two about how we're dealing with our current reputational issues. As Gwynne mentioned, we are making some structural changes as we implement the recommendations of the special investigation. These changes are proceeding well. I will ensure that we continue to make good progress while working closely with the board and appropriate external advisors. My role as interim CEO is to stabilize the organization, both internally and externally, until the new CEO is in place. In addition to speaking to investors and clients about the progress we're making, I'm focused on ensuring that we are executing projects to the best of our ability and that new business opportunities are being actively pursued. Our talented leadership team is committed to working together to ensure that we continue to deliver high-quality projects and win new mandates, the top priorities for the company. Over the past 6 weeks, I've spoken to a number of clients, partners, and suppliers, and I'm glad to report that the level of support is strong. I've also been speaking with employees and am reassured that they are 100% focused on what they do best. Their talents and abilities are the foundation on which this company rests. I firmly believe, both from my own personal experience and my observation of other multinationals, that challenges also present opportunities. We will seize these opportunities and come out the other side a stronger company. This is a question of integrity. I'm talking about long-term integrity based on the values and personal commitment of the 28,000 talented, energetic, and knowledgeable people we have working for us in 100 countries. Our employees want to do the right thing and to be properly supported and guided when they face challenges, as we all inevitably do. Nothing can diminish or take away the fundamental values of this company, values that are encompassed by our We Care philosophy. We Care touches on our business, which we are committed and allow no compromise. The following areas are the highlights of our We Care program: health and safety, commitment to our employees, sustainable development of the communities where we live and work, protection of the environment, and the quality of our work. It is important that we reinforce these fundamental principles of the company. Nothing that has happened can undermine my belief that this is a company made up of people who sincerely care. We have made hard but important decisions because we care, and we will continue to do the right things to grow the profitability and reach of this strong Canadian company. I expect there will be some follow-on effects from what occurred prior to March 26th, and we will deal with them if and when they arise. We cannot change the past, but we can learn from it so that we become a stronger company. In short, to paraphrase the famous quote, "United we stand," the loss of a few people does not affect our overall ability to function efficiently as a team. It forces us to use our well-known capabilities to be strategic and innovative. It requires that we find solutions so we can continue to allow what works to work and what doesn't to be left behind. If this company had not learned to evolve with the times and adapt itself accordingly, it would not be here 101 years after it was founded. I would like to close by thanking my colleagues on the board of directors for their wise counsel and guidance throughout 2011 and especially over the last few months, as well as their keen interest in all aspects of our business. I'd particularly like to thank Gwynne Morgan for his tremendous support and leadership during a year of challenges for SNC-Lavalin and its stakeholders. I would also like to thank our clients, both here in Canada and worldwide, for their continued confidence in our expertise and you, our shareholders, for your ongoing support. We are committed to increasing the value of your investment in SNC Lavalin. And finally, I would like to thank our employees. We have a highly skilled and dedicated team, and I thank them all for their hard work and exemplary performance. They have always been and will always be the foundation of our success. Thank you very much.